Can I take this opportunity to welcome all of us, all of the members of the portfolio committee, the professionals from the social service side, in your various categories and specialties, areas where I'm a layman, but you are welcome. Today we will be listening in direct, and I believe we must be able to have some form of way on the issues you seem to be raising. The keyword is that it must be clear, concise. Don't speak 20 times of something you're supposed to speak once. But when you speak 20 times, it disappears in 20 times. See, I had a teacher, I keep on using her as an example, so she said, I want you to answer the following questions in one page. Because Mr. Thompson asked me, if you answer in 7 pages, and your proper answer is in page number 3, from page 2 up to 7 pages, you must move on. Because she said, I said one page because I know if you know the answer, you can answer it in page 1. The fact that we're trying to answer in page 2, you are the fire and air. You don't know it. So my philosophy is the thicker the document, the more questionable is the authority of the author in the content. Do we agree? More questionable is the authority of the author in the content. Simpler the document, the bigger the authority on the content. Thank you very much. Apologies.
Good morning, Chairman, our members, and the member of the shelf. I have an apology from a member. She won't be with us today due to prior commitments. Another apology is that the minister will join the meeting later. Her flight will arrive at 10 o'clock, so she will come straight from the airport to join the meeting. So, those are the apologies.
Apologies
for
the members, can I table for consideration? Can I table apologies? I see you nodding, one of you. I appreciate it. Thank you very much. We're moving towards Christmas time, celebrating the time of the Son of Man. Yeah. Right? The agenda, I propose we take the agenda as it is, so that we not confuse the grammar of the issues. This is a long time to work, especially on the first week of December. The agenda is adopted. Am I correct?
Yes.
Thank you, all the members. We've got two items there. Presentation by the council itself, right? Of the social service profession. And later, the National Association of Southern Youth Workers. I'm not sure if we want them to present one by one and discuss.
Basket.
Should they all present?
Amanda.
Yes. These are others. So we start with the council and the babies come later. How is that? But before we do that, let's do the introduction. My name is Moses Mubarak, and I'm here for your committee. So that's what I'm going to do.
We need to say good morning, Secretary and Department. My name is Yoli Sakanye. I'm the content advisor that committee. Thank you. Thank you, Chair. My name is Leslie Madambe. I'm the registrar from the council.
I'm Maria Mabito. I'm the president of the Council for Social Service Commission.
Good morning. My name is Donald Ngonyama. I'm the vice president of the Council.
Good morning. I'm Lorena.
Good morning, Chair President and the honorable members. My name is Mzolisi Tony, the acting director of transport, DSV.
Good morning, members. My name is Julia Zingo, and I'm the chief officer of the finance committee.
Good morning, everyone. My name is Shannon Valentine. I am the chairperson of the professional board for social work.
Everyone, my name is Sundaris Balasi. I'm the member of CAS.
Good morning, members and colleagues. My name is Ongemeti Kavasia. I'm the member of CASA.
Good morning. My name is Leonis Vilakasi, Education, Training and Development Manager, Council.
Very good morning, Chairperson and colleagues. My name is Vincent Chavangana. I'm the Social Manager, Council.
Good morning, Chairperson and honorable members and colleagues. I'm Olile Pruko, Chief Director in the Office of Pruko. Pruko. I'm the Chief Director in the Office of the Director General.
Good morning, Honorable Chairperson and Honorable Members. My name is Colleen Mamala. I'm the DDG responsible for welfare services in the Department of Social Development. Good morning, Honorable Members and Council Members, members of the NCCWP. My name is Sivan. The same name is Lehodi. I'm the Chief Director responsible for professional support within the Department of Social Development. Thank you.
Morning, Honorable Members. My name is Lula Makalinge. I'm a member of Council.
Good morning, Chairperson and Honorable Members. My name is Arthur Harris and I'm a member of Council.
Good morning, Honorable Members and Council Members. My name is Azi Wemagida. I am the chairperson of the Child and Youth Care Board.
Good morning, everybody. My name is Veni Tambalu, and I am representing the National Association of Tambalu from the National Association of Child Care Workers.
Good morning, Chair. Good morning, Honourable Members. My name is Merle Orthop and I serve as the Director of the National Association of Child Care Workers.
Good morning, everybody. Good morning, Chairperson of the Council of Social Services. My name is Pat Martina. I am a child and youth care worker. I represent the NACCWP.
Good morning, Honourable Members. My name is Tungile Mzulwini. I'm from the National Association of Child Care Workers. Mzulwini.
Good morning, Chairperson and Honourable Members, members of Council. My name is Elwin Gallant. I'm the National Chairperson of the National Association of Child and Youth Care Workers.
Good morning, Chair, Honourable Members and Colleagues. My name is Hitler Sikhitla. I'm the Professional Conduct Manager from CANSA.
Good morning, everybody. My name is Wakang Tawana, and I'm from the Parliamentary Monitoring Group. Good morning, Chair. My name is Panasa Mwako. I'm from Blackfish.
Good morning, Chair. My name is Nareya Price, and I'm also from Black Sash.
Good morning, Chairperson. My name is the Council and colleagues. My name is Jessica Longway, and I'm the Parliamentary and Cabinet Liaison Person.
Jessica
Longway.
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 Good morning, Chairperson and honourable members and colleagues present today. My name is Sabina Shapolofa. I serve as the Minister's Special Advisor.
Social Development Committee.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson and Honorable Members.
Regional Development. We really appreciate your interest in our organization and for inviting us to brief you on the various aspects of the work that we do. This is the second time that we appear before the portfolio committee since it's been inaugurated in 2016. And so our presentation is in such a way that it's like somehow a continuation, but we know some of the honorable members are new to the portfolio committee, so we've made provision for that. The presentation is also aligned with the invitation letter that we've received, that we should focus on the funding of the council and also on the accreditation and training of social service professions. But here and there, where there are other methods that are related to these two areas, we will provide information. We would like to acknowledge the support that we get from BSD here. We had met with them before we came to the meeting. We met with the minister on Friday, and we met with the DG a few weeks before. Thank you. So what we are going to do now, the registrar, Ms. Manamba, is going to do the presentation. The entire presentation, and where it is necessary, other members of the council. We've got the ESCO here, ESCO members, and we've got managers for the various sections of the council, especially registration, professional conduct, and the training and education. So they will fill in a certain one if it's necessary. Thank you very much, Chair. So, Ms. Malama, continue.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you to the members. I will start by just giving an intro, the outline of my presentation. The purpose, the overview, the fund of control, the financial management, the corrective measures, DSD funding, accreditation, training and curriculum, challenges and video financial needs, and the recommendations. As I do my presentation, I'll try to unpack some of the slides for the benefit of clarity. The purpose is to give an overview of the mandate of council, which covers registration, education, training and development, professional conduct and the finance division. To brief the committee on funding support from the Department of Social Development, to brief the committee on accreditation, training, curriculum of social workers and challenges, to lobby the support of the portfolio committee to implement Section 12, which talks to appropriation. The very same clause has not been taken advantage of since the establishment of council, therefore it becomes very important that the portfolio committee will set how to fast-track initiating or finalizing the process of appropriation so that council can continue to excel in its mandate. The overview of council. This council, the ESCO, is part of the fourth council, which means there have been three councils before. Council is a statutory body established in terms of Section 2 of the Social Service Professions Act, which has been amended many a time, and it was previously known as the Social and Associated Workers Act. The first South African Council was established and paved way for the establishment of the Professional Board Social Work and Child and Care Workers in the 1890s. The second Council and the third Council carried on with the mandate to make sure that all emerging professions, occupations are professionalized. So social work is the longest existing profession within the social service profession sector. The mandate is to guide and regulate the professions of social work, child and youth care work in aspects pertaining to registration, education, training and development, as well as professional conduct. This slide just shows at a glance how council is established council, we've got what we call Section 10 committees, and also Section 9 is the expo, and the Section 10 committees are varied according to the needs of the council. We've got also Committee for Preliminary Inquiries and the Professional Conduct Committee, which assists with the professional conduct mandate. Then we have the Secretariat, which is made up of the Registrar and the administrative staff supporting all the different divisions. Funding of Council. As mentioned in the Act, Council can be funded in different ways. Money is received in terms of this Act, which gives Council the responsibility to collect subscriptions from the practitioners. Fines imposed and recovered in terms of the Act. Money is appropriated by Parliament for achieving the office of the Council, which is the one of 22. Money is obtained by way of loans raised with the approval of the Minister. Any money is accrued to Council from any other source. So currently the main revenue stream for Council has always been collection of subscriptions. The following slide talks to the total revenue, and the table on the right shows the income statement. So if you look at from 2012 to 2019, there's been an increase in terms of collections, and this also ties with the growth of the database. At the point where the fourth council came in, our database for social work, for example, was sitting at about 26,000. And currently, we have the numbers growing. We have over 33,000 social workers registered. So if you look at the web document that was sent, it shows the increase in terms of membership for social work category, students, and so forth. So the collection, if you look at 2012, we were sitting at 5 million. But by 2018, there's a huge increase. We collected almost 25 million, which at a glance might seem like there's lots of money, you know, that Council has. But actually, it goes into servicing the administration, making sure that ESCO and Council can meet, the board can also meet and be able to further the aims and objects of Council. So the total that was received the most was from membership fees. The other collections, you know, small from fines, some from the status report applications and so forth. If you look at the slide on the right, the table on the right, it shows in 20, actually the red would show where we had our expenses. Yes. Where we have the red shows our expenses, and the blue is the income, and the greenish one, there's some surplus that we have made in 2012, a very tiny surplus that we made. And I will explain why we seem to have made some, you know, surplus in 2013 and now in 2018. Council had to take a drastic measure to say, let's reduce the number of meetings we can have and explore other avenues we can meet so that we stretch the little budget that we have or the little funds that we have. So we had telecons, we had Skype meetings, and any other form of meeting other than physical meetings, because it expends a lot of money. So the surplus comes from the cost-saving measures. In 2016, we had a huge loss, and in 2017 as well, there was a loss. So at the moment, you know, like I say, we're mainly collecting from our practitioners, and that has to be split between, you know, taking care of our operational expenses as well as making sure our governance structures are in place and they're doing what they're supposed to be doing. There were issues, of course, in the past, issues of mismanagement and poor leadership, which were exacerbated by the accounting officer who was in place at that time, which prevented the first council from, you know, furthering the aim and the mandate, which led to a collapse in the financial management system. There were no audited financial statements for about 3 financial years. There was suspicion of fraudulent activities. There was lot of funding. And all of these challenges which prevented the oversight structure to do what they were supposed to do, to make sure that council can actually collect more revenue, see more hands-on in terms of what was happening. With the result that there was financial mismanagement, funding from the department was withdrawn, and so forth. Okay. So the third council appointed the first risk and audit committee within 3 months of its inauguration in December 2009. It conducted a forensic audit. It appointed internal auditors to look at where are the problem areas, because it became very apparent that there were problems. Part of the findings were, one, inadequate documentation, reporting and accountability requirements, so there was poor reporting. Risk of having no finance division. The accounting officer was a novice, you know, not all, but she was everything. She was the finance manager, she was, you know, doing everything by herself. To the point, therefore, my sister. So there wasn't a finance division yet. And that prevented, you know, oversight, because then the committees would not have access to documents. There wasn't any documents. And the audit also revealed that there was contravention of Section 12. And council was compromised in its reputation because there could not be proper financial accounting. Then it led to loss of funding. The implications of no funding, council was unable or unable to take critical positions. In our case, you know, ICT infrastructure, with the result that we still have people traveling from all over the provinces to come to the office to get a receipt. You know, somebody spends more than 400 to come and collect a receipt instead of doing it online. Fit for purpose structure, we still have council sitting in an office that doesn't really present a professional look. The structure, the overall structure is not enough. The current structure, you'll see when I look at the staff establishment that ideally we should be having so many numbers of vacancies in council, but we can't because of the limitations of funding. Inability to implement Section 14A, Section 1, which talks to establishment of professional boards. You know, the finding that we have, how we use funds to subsidize, cross-subsidize, to make sure that other emerging occupations can also come on board. The envisaged establishment and professionalization of community development practice with the current financial structure is not feasible. We still don't have enough in our kitty to subsidize, fast-tracking the professionalization of community development, because in the first 2 to 3 years, you need to have enough money to just do the mobilization in provinces to make sure that people understand what it means to be professionalized, the responsibilities, and what it means for the employer, what it means for the communities who would benefit from the services of a recognized occupation that is now professionalized. What corrective measures did council put in place? When the fourth council came in, it carried forward what the third council sought to do before they left. And between the time the fourth council came in 2016, there was a gap of about 15 months, which also created problems because there was a vacuum in leadership. So the fourth council developed and implemented a turnaround strategy, looking at all the issues which were highlighted by the internal audit and the handover report from the third council. A closeout on the external audit findings for 2013 to 2015, and they undertook the, so all the outstanding audited financial statements were completed within the term of the fourth council. They made sure to prioritize during all the outstanding years up to the current in 2016. They executed the finding of the disciplinary hearing and released the former registrar of the duties and appointed the current registrar. Yes, sir. Establishment of finance division. For the first time in the history of council, there was a qualified chartered accountant, which is my colleague, Ms. Lorraine Matuta, for the first time. Finance division was properly, it's not yet where we want it to be because it's understaffed, but we have a debtors officer and a creditors officer and a maintenance clerk. memory is in the hands of people outside of council. So when council came in, they took stock of all that and said, no more consultants. We have to properly equip council and have properly qualified and experienced people. And I'm proud to say the management team that has been brought on to support the mandate of council has really been a good pillar of support for myself as registrar, but also for the leadership structure of council and the board. Improved stakeholder relations, we have to make sure that as council, we clean up the legacy that was already starting to become a normality, that council is, you know, not professional, council is not communicating, council is not responsive. By doing a lot of advocacy work, introducing communication channels, making sure that we support initiatives out there that would, you know, reaffirm the value of having a statutory body as council. Funding from ESD, in terms of Section 12, it is not. So that type A talks to, you know, any money that could come from any other source. We've had some funding from the Department of Social Development. Sometimes we get money from teachers and so on, but we've been writing proposals as a request from department to say, give us a business plan so that we can give you money for a particular project, and we've been doing that. There have been problems with how we are funded because we're coming under the financial award for NPOs, which for us poses a conflict because as council we're supposed to advocate and lobby and make sure that NPOs get funding and so on so that they can retain our practitioners instead of retraining them because they don't have funding. But we were actually tipping into that kitty meant for NPOs. And also there was a misunderstanding. Yes.
If you are funded from NPO, you've got NPO obligations.
We're not even there.
We've
only received the money under that umbrella of NPOs, but we're not an NPO. We are actually competing with NPO for funding. We are a statutory body, so we can't be regarded as an NPO because then it means we have to change the classification and establishment of council, because now the Act says council must be established. Yes. Like I said, it creates a conflict for us because we're supposed to champion, you know, the existence of NGOs as opposed to taking away from the money that must go to NGOs. But it made a difference because the little that we would receive will help us do certain projects for council mandate. There's currently misunderstanding between DSD and National Treasury on how to classify and access funds for different directorates. For example, we get money from DDG Nomad's directorate, but then when COMDEF wants to also do something to fast track community development professionalization, Treasury says, no, but we've already given you money. You actually have lots of money. Why do you now want 15 million for, you know, again, in the same financial year? So we've had to sit with Treasury to explain how we service different directorates within the department, but also to start a business case model where we say Treasury must look at how council must be funded. Because for as long as our profession clause is not, you know, implemented, council will always be coming, you know, begging to say, please give us something to carry out our mandate. There's a new costing which members might be aware of, which shows how an ideal, you know, in an ideal situation, the policy, the new policy that was signed off in 2017 and the draft bill which must now repeal the current act should be costed. How many members you would need, how many, you know, offices you should have and so forth. So just looking at the costing model, it shows clearly, it indicates that council cannot be able to do what it's supposed to do with the current scenario. Project funding, this is just an illustration of how we received money, which year, and when was money withdrawn. and for what reason. So in 2012, for example, an amount of 1,324,690 was given. Reports were submitted, which are giving progress and evidence of how the money was used. In 2013, the remaining tranche of 750,000 was given, and reports were submitted. In 2014, 1,632,898 was given, and there were concerns raised around the quality of reports. Meetings were held with the Office of DDG Nxumalo to say we acknowledge their problems, how that's redressed. In 2015, 814 remaining was given. Progress reports for quarter three and quarter four were not submitted. So there were all those issues which led to the department saying we're not going to fund council. In 2016, no money was given. In 2017, no money was given, and the fourth council had already been in place from 2016 June, and was aware of the challenges, and every court was prepared. 2018, no funding was received because of the delays in terms of, you know, the processes leading to signing off on the SLA. In 2019, 1,946,000 was dispersed, which we are currently reporting for, and we've had monitoring and compliance visits to see how far we are with the disbursement. 2020, we haven't received anything yet. We submitted a business plan, and we're hoping that the SLA will soon be signed off so that between now and March 2020, we have expended on the money that has been allocated. The issues around accreditation, Cancer West organizations were not responsible for accrediting institutions or T-Lab colleges, but the Council on Education is doing that for universities. And the Quality Council for Trade Occupation QCTO is responsible for the T-Labs, which are the technical vocational education and training colleges. We play a role in terms of what the Act prescribes to make sure that we look at the curriculum. And we look at standardization. So the norms and standards are prescribed by the council's board, and we share it with our partners, the QCTO, Council on Education, to make sure that any training provider is clear that any student can learn at any institution, the outcome will be the same, and the quality of, you know, the product will be the same. Council accredits continue professional development training, and we advocate for it so that our practitioners are not stagnant. As they graduate from whatever college or university, they aspire to learn what are new trends in their community so that they can be more responsive. The CPD system is established by Council to enhance the quality of services. Training and curriculum continues. Council exercises authority in respect of all matters. I've already talked to that through the professional board, the minimum standards, and then, you know, to do quality assurance visits. We have been lacking in terms of quality assurance visits because they are very cost intensive. We have to travel to institutions to see that whatever they submitted to say, here are registered trainers who are legit to train our students are actually doing the tuition. We must go and see the kind of setting that they have, whether they've got laboratories to, you know, help the students do their practicum in terms of counseling and so forth. So because of how intensive it is, you have to visit, you can't do two visits in a day. You have to sit, go through the curriculum, look at how they do their training, and also observe some of the learning taking place. The other challenge we have is access to training. Not all universities are offering training in child and nuclear work and community development. Online studies are not feasible for everyone. Not all universities have their courses online. So all of these issues, I'm not going to repeat them because they are very clear. The slide just talks to that. As you can see, social work is 86%, you know, presented in all the universities in the country. There's even an association of schools of social work. We have come there very, very, very minimal. Child and youth care work also, you know, we have few universities that are offering training, and most relying on TVET to assist with, you know, training our child and care workers at lower levels. Key challenges, the appropriation clause issues. We are unable to, you know, to do a lot in terms of carrying our money because no money is appropriated to fund all the mandates of council. Inability to implement the costing model. And the costing cannot just be for costing, it has to be implemented to make sure that the country can move forward, the workforce is improved, social challenges are being dealt with, because then we can have a properly, you know, funded workforce in country. Funding council as an NPO is contravening the establishment of council as a statutory body as prescribed by the Act. Access to training for SSPs, it becomes a challenge for most universities to provide the training because they don't have the funding. So there's a need to actually encourage from the Minister of Higher Education to say all universities must be tasked with making sure that there's increased access. There's funding for them to establish schools of child and nuclear work, schools of community development, or even a subdivision within the social work division if ever there is, you know, a possibility to merge them. Difficulty in executing Section 3C, where council is expected to advise the minister in relation to any matter affecting the profession. This section is very critical, and in the past we have never had any interaction with the minister except on the day of inauguration. And we are fortunate to say we have met with Honourable Minister Zulu and with DDG Tony and with the teams in the department, the acting DG, and we are hoping that where we have started now with our current minister, it will pave the way for council to play the critical role that it should play in terms of advising the minister. We've had situations where KDAT on the ground wants to be doing, and we could have best advised the minister on the issue. Because our working at the coal face, and they really are working selflessly because there are challenges. There are challenges on the ground with, you know, poor salaries, gender allowances. There's a lot of issues that they perpetually raise with the council to say, what is council doing for us, because the working conditions are not okay. Salaries are affording, you know, there's lots of issues that they raise, but as a statutory council, we can only advocate, we can lobby. Staff establishment, I've talked to the fit for purpose structure. As you can see on the structure, where the orange is what is still vacant, and the vacant ones are the nice reddish color. In the office of the registrar, we've got posts for a deputy registrar, for a legal person. We don't have those are very critical posts because council deals with legal issues all the time. And we need to have an in-house legal person. And I'm currently, as you can see, I'm a voting champ because I'm on sick leave, but I have to come to work because I don't have a deputy. So all of my managers become acting registered. So it is important that those critical positions are filled, because then when my managers are acting as registrars, it means their mandates are suffering because they don't have assistant managers. So they would leave what they're doing so that they can fill up. In finance and administration, we have 5 positions. We need 6 critical positions. HR, we have 3 positions. We have 2 critical positions for a manager and a support person outstanding. Information and technology, we have 1 critical position. So all of those positions that are highlighted as outstanding are very critical. However, because of the limitations of funding, we are not able to fill them up. Immediate financial needs, and when I say immediate, it's because they are, you know, medium-term and long-term needs. But currently, our life and death needs are the system development. We want to make sure that at any given moment, if a member of parliament says we want the statistics in KZN in this sub-district, we are able to, you know, at the click of a button, say 20 males, 5 females, young, over 60, and so on, management and so forth. We don't have that. But yes, so our social workers work until... Yes. And so anything to do with system development, the ICT hardware, the software, the server room installation, and making sure that we've got a fully functional network system which can tell us a story without us explaining, is very important and critical. It's very important. needed. So we need to upgrade at a tune of 3,857,000 as a matter of licenses, like I said, we need that now. Property improvement, we've acquired a building from the legacy of the Fed Council. There was money set aside to get a house, additional house for council. We've acquired the house. We need to improve it so that it has the right look and feel. Human resource, we need to fill all those critical positions which I've just outlined in the previous slide. And it needs about 4,784,000 to fill up those critical positions now. Establishment of community development practice, the 3 million that is put there is just a small portion that would help kickstart the process. We need to be able to start going to provinces as council because at the moment we're relying on the Department of, as a Directorate of Community Development to champion some of the work in the provinces, which create a problem in terms of whose responsibility it is to professionalize, because council does not have currently, you know, surplus money to do that work. So we actually encroaching on the department doing the work, you know, going to provinces, setting up the meetings, but we need to actually champion, you know, community outreach, setting up a database, driving the election process and so forth. It requires money. What are we recommending? For the portfolio committee to note the legal mandate of council. The legal mandate, because it is not out of our own desire that there is a council established the way it is. It needs to be supported. We need the committee to guide and assist council to, regarding implementation of Section 12.1.3, which is the appropriation clause. Like I said, we started a process of business case. It needs support to make sure that it happens, because sometimes things get lost in the en route to somewhere. Note the processes of accreditation, training, and curriculum of social service practitioners. There's a lot that has to be done to strengthen universities and to empower council to do the quality assurance to make sure that we root out the bogus institutions.
Just a second.
Yes.
At the end of the presentation, I was going to allow 2 or 5 minutes just to get your summary highlights for you. You don't have to be detailed, just to give us a sense of what the issues they are raising. You don't have to be too detailed, just give an idea. I mean, it's 2 or 3 minutes. Where are you and
that was my last slide. Yes. Thank you.
So it's giving me a register, because you might not be registered. So after 60, I can consider being accessing this profession and want to be registered. I don't know the register was mine. You remember all the presenting to very competent? This is what it is. Association of Child and Care.
Child and Youth.
Child and Youth Care Workers. Association of Child and Youth Care Workers.
honorable members. Thank you for the opportunity to present as per the invitation on the challenges that... Pardon? My name is Veni Thambudu. I'm one of the directors of the National Association. Veni Thambudu. Thambudu. Thambudu.
Thambudu.
Thambudu.
Can you spell it?
Thumbadoo. So I first wanted to start by saying thank you very much for the opportunity to present as per the invitation on the challenges that are faced by the child and youth care sector. I think what we present here is well known to both the South African Council for Social Service Professions, the Professional Board for Child and Youth Care, as well as the National Department of Social Development. However, this is the first time, this is the first time in 25 years we have the opportunity to present at the Portfolio Committee, and we just want to say that this is appreciated. Just a quick background of the NACCW and child and youth care work. The NACCW has existed for 44 years, always as a non-racial professional association for child and youth care workers in South Africa. Thambudu. I don't think you're going to forget me now. Historically, I just wanted to say the child and youth care work is primarily in residential care, in children's homes, now called child and youth care centres, where many child and youth care workers are still employed. The NACCW has striven to professionalise the child and youth care sector because of their impact on vulnerable children, both in communities, but particularly in residential care. Some of the most troubled children in our country reside there. Now, the White Paper for Social Welfare of 1996 recognised the need for different social service professions in the welfare sector. Statutory regulations sought by the NACCW since 1992 were realised in 2014. What we saw was immediate positive response from the sector. 2,000 child and youth care workers applied for registration within the first 6 months, indicating their eagerness to professionalise. Registration with a South African Council for Social Service Professions dignified our profession, and it provided for multidisciplinary and integrated work, which was envisioned by the White Paper. But unfortunately, we feel in 5 years, materially, not much has changed in terms of the outlook and possibilities for child and youth care work in South Africa, and we want to share some of that with you. But in my next slide, I'm just going to take us back a step about the Izibindi model. Izibindi is a Zulu word meaning courage. And the Izibindi model was developed by the NACCW. Courage. Izibindi. It's a Zulu. Initiated in KwaZulu-Natal in partnership with the Provincial Department of Social Development. and the model grew exponentially over the years into all the provinces, mainly with slower. Yes.
There are two critical things that we must understand. Coverage and or battles of
care.
Battles of care for young people.
Children, yes.
Children are vulnerable.
Yes.
Vulnerable.
Yes.
It's important to understand that when we read, we have that meaning at the back of our mind, mm-hmm. so that we can be able to flow.
Yes.
Where then does this sacrifice expression, and where is this courage, and so on. Thank you for clarifying the
question. Thank you. So, the model group and the project were replicated in all the different provinces, mainly at that point with donor funding. Then in 2012, a memorandum of understanding between NACCW and the National Department of Social Development required NACCW to provide technical assistance to the National Department and the provincial departments for the national replication of the Izibindi model. The Izibindi model was a ministerial mandate towards youth employment and the creation of decent jobs for people. The aim was to embed the Izibindi model in 400 NGOs in rural and historically disadvantaged areas, to train 10,000 child and youth care workers who were mainly unemployed, unskilled women in these areas, and to develop a flexible children's workforce. And by flexible, I refer to people who work children's hours, mornings, evenings, public holidays, school holidays, a flexible workforce to provide services to 1.4 million children with protection and early intervention services as mandated by the Children's Act. So some of the Izibindi achievements, the direct impact of this joint initiative with National Department of Social Development, Provincial Departments of Social Development, the NACCW, local communities, local implementing partners, NGOs, CBOs, FBOs, and funders and other partners, was that at that end of that MOU period, 366 Izibindi sites were developed nationally. 6,577 new child and youth care workers were trained, mentored, and this was a dramatic increase in the number of child and youth care workers nationally. 332 unique child and youth care children were serviced. Government counted these numbers cumulatively over 5 years as to 1.148 million children were serviced. We also developed 106 mentors and supervisors. This provided the impetus for the supervisory workforce in child and youth care to be developed. Also, what was a real important achievement was that there were 268 training venues that were accredited by HWCETA in rural areas. Now, the HWCETA won't allow you to train an accredited training if you don't have an accredited venue. So to set that up, it meant that following the NACCW, there could be many more educational opportunities for people in these areas because the venues were already accredited. Almost 40 pieces of research and documentation demonstrated evidence of a successful model. And child and youth care workers became recognized as being an important workforce being deployed in communities.
This is a condition we don't have. Am I correct? Can you just say it again? Because it's a very useful presentation.
We do have.
No? In the main idea. So I missed it.
Yes.
So my apologies. Dario, I think I'm proceeding. You have said where?
Morning.
Yeah, Rona, eh? I'm just missing the hall. Well, I was doing this thing. I was going to the presentation last night, so there's no way I could have come up.
Thank you. The indirect impact of this joint initiative is that Izibindi and the Izibindi Safe Park model, which was attached to the Izibindi, drew national and international attention and awards. the South African contribution of community-based child and youth care work to social services became internationally recognized, described as the most important development in child and youth care since the start of the SOS villages. Now, the SOS villages were initiated after World War II, and it became an international model of services in residential care to children. And this was a community-based response linked to the HIV/AIDS pandemic. The model drew the attention of UN agencies operating in South Africa, UNHCR and UNICEF, and the model has been successfully implemented by the NACCW under the banner Isibindi Without Borders in Zambia, in Namibia, in Lebanon, in Kenya, and potentially now in Greece and Mozambique. We've just heard yesterday from UNHCR that they would be looking at Lesotho, Eswati, and going back to Namibia. So the model, a South African, proudly South African model, has the opportunity, is being replicated in its own adjustments in different countries. The two other spin-offs of the model have been developed by the NACCW, deploying child and youth care workers in a project called Isibindi Isikoleni, which is child and youth care workers of courage in schools with the Department of Basic Education, Isibindi Impilo with the Department of Health, and that project is being piloted now properly in the Western Cape. This opens new settings for child and youth care workers in other government departments. The transition. Now the transition of the Ribendi projects into the new national DSD model. The NACCW's Memorandum of Understanding with National Department of Social Development ended on March 2018, and NACCW officially handed over to DSD in March 2019. The National Department of Social Development has initiated a new model for community-based services at prevention and early intervention level. However, National Treasury has provided funding to provinces to complete the training target set for 2020. Provinces have managed this transition from Isibindi differently. By August 2019, there were only 53 Isibindi projects employing 1,069 child and youth care workers. Across the country, child care workers were receiving varying stipends while qualified in the accredited FET certificate at level 4 in child and youth care. The expectation was that they would have been shifted into salaries versus stipends, and that there would be a standardized salary across the board. A survey conducted by NACCW found that 88% of qualified child and youth care workers are still receiving stipends. Now, these are trained, capable, but unemployed child and youth care workers in the provinces. If you look at the numbers that have dropped, we've trained up 6,000, and at the moment we have 8,000 registered with the South African Council for Social Service Professions, but we have unemployed child and youth care workers in the country. In some provinces, they've employed child and youth care workers as care workers or caregivers, which allows the Provincial Department of Social Development to circumvent the professional requirements and the remuneration level. So you can just sort of in a way you're paying them less for getting a qualified worker at 50 minutes. Not yet. The mentors were not employed as we had planned for. The loss of the supervisory leadership in child and youth care. So child care workers are not being supervised by child care workers as is in the legislative requirement. Child care workers are obliged to pay registration fees with the South African Council to practice. So they have to pay these fees from stipends, or if they're unemployed, they won't be considered if they don't have the money to pay their registration fees. It's a very difficult situation that child care workers face. The late payments of stipends is a common cry of distress as the annual dry season, which is the end of the financial year, happens. due to late payments of subsidies to the NGO sector and late stipends to the childcare workers, sometimes up to 6 months, people do not receive their salary or their stipend, and they receive it in a block. This has been an old cry that has been raised again and again. But just some of the more broader significant challenges as well. The training and opportunity, educational opportunities, I think referred to by the registrar as well, that we need more degree programs for child and youth care workers. We need more distance learning child and youth care degrees. We need more bursaries for child and youth care workers to study, and the development of supervisors and managers. So these are areas of development. But I think I want to spend a little bit of time on the OSD, because in government, the occupational specific dispensation and the lack of mobility opportunities for childcare workers is our big concern. There are different salary scales for child and youth care workers compared to other social service professions, like social workers and community development, even though they have the same qualification and even though they would have the same years of experience. There's also a glass ceiling where child and youth care workers' upward mobility ends at level 6, when others have opportunities to access level 7, level 8, and move forward. There also are minimal supervisory levels, so there's no managerial level in the OSD for child and youth care workers. Posts in provincial and national DSD are not always open to child and youth care workers. Posts are not even advertised as social service professions, which gives enough opportunity for the different social services, social professions to apply. And there are no child and youth care workers at provincial, very few at provincial if there are, but definitely at national level to champion child and youth care. And our concern here is that there's nobody that articulates the voice of child and youth care workers as powerfully as we would like. And the word champion comes up. We need a champion for child and youth care workers. Some of our significant challenges, again, there is a need to strengthen the bonds between DSD and NGO as social service providers. That partnership needs to be a stronger partnership, and child and youth care workers feature very strongly in the NGO sector. There's a need for the inclusion of childcare workers in all national DSD consultation processes related to social service professions. We just heard that in the Eastern Cape this week, there was a discussion on the social service professions policy, and social workers and community development were invited to the consultation, but child and youth care workers were not. That's just the most recent example. The inclusion of child and youth care workers in all DSD advocacy processes. For example, the motivation for the social work fund, which we support for unemployed social workers, could have included the unemployed child and youth care workers that we are talking about. Could it not have been called a social service profession fund, so that we actually embraced the others? So I think that is the kind of advocacy concern we express. The impact of low levels of funding to child and youth care centers, the delayed and varied increases in subsidies to child and youth care workers after the Nawongo judgment has also been raised for attention. And I think the need in child and youth care centers for competent, credible monitoring from provincial departments of social development. But if you understand, if child and youth care workers are not employed at provincial departments, then the opportunity for an integrated assessment and monitoring of child care centers won't happen, because it would just be one-sided assessment by social workers only. We conclude by wanting to say that we believe effective recognition of child and youth care workers in policy and other documentation should be considered and advocated for by National Department of Social Development, reflecting an understanding of the role and the potential roles of child care workers in the implementation of the Children's Act and other legislation, including, for example, children, including the role that 8,000 registered child and youth care workers could have played in the foster care crisis and possibly can continue to play in that, for an example. The respect, recognition, and champion for child and youth care workers, the development and protection of the status of the child and youth care profession requires championing at national and provincial levels. The presentation of the Honourable Deputy Minister at the NACCW 2019 conference offended the childcare workforce and resulted in her withdrawing her support to the child and youth care sector. The Honourable Deputy Minister spoke at the NACCW International Conference in July 2019. Present at that conference were representatives from the National Department of Social Development, the Registrar, the Chairperson of the Professional Board, and the President of Council. But unfortunately, in her speech, she referred to elements of her understanding of child and youth care as a profession that was insulting and offensive to the child and youth care workers, resulting in a resolution being passed that needed to be addressed with and a meeting with the minister. I think that in a delegation that from the NACCW jet went to the minister to express the concerns from the field with the departmental officials as well, I think the minister felt offended by elements of the speech being queried and said that she was not, you know, feeling her need to support the child and youth care sector and champion the cause. The potential of the child and youth care workforce in South Africa is enormous, as envisioned by the white paper, and this has been experienced in the rollout of the Ubuntu model. The impact of the statutory regulation of child and youth care sector has been extremely positive. However, the workforce developed in the Ubuntu rollout is no longer being deployed optimally. So we've invested money from Treasury through the Department of Social Development in the development and training of child and youth care workers, and some of them, a large number of them, are unemployed. Most of them are earning stipends. So the lack of opportunities for advancement within the public and private sectors are hampering the full development of the child and youth care workforce. And the sector requires the political will to support us, and we are very appreciative of the opportunity given to us today to put the case of child and youth care workers forward to the portfolio committee. Thank you very much for your attention.
Department, can you give us an overview? You don't have to read from anything. Give us a sense. Yes, this is here are the issues that are coming up. One, the profession is safe in all its facets. In what area of work do they require with the expected contribution in line with our skills? Is a particular capacity required? There's a particular relationship we need. These are two major things. There's a particular capacity we require. There is a relationship that is supposed to exist. Everything that is said here is those two things. Capacity required for the purpose of this established articulated work, and a particular institutional relationship that is supposed to exist. There is a concern across those three areas in various forms. But the specifics are there. Fortunately, my advantage is really before I got deep into politics, I was a qualified nurse.
I was made to understand the significance of nursing cancer with all its difficulties. When you are a nurse, you don't like nursing cancer. But you cannot dispute what they require. But you don't like them, but they make your life very difficult. But they do it in the interest of the patient. Of course, the nursing association is all right now. No. It's on behalf of workers. And that's the level dialectical contribution must be there. Association will there speak for nurses, and the country is going to be there to speak on behalf of society. That cash is necessary, must always be there. Here, in the social service, in the 80s, when we were fighting apartheid, there was something called SASPO. And I know the pioneers of that, which had a particular role. You can explain it better if you're very out of profession. But the key thing is that here are the foot soldiers of the service in their various forms. Capacity, that is not clear. Capacitation, obligations that are not clear. And institutional relations, which are imperative, which are also not so clear. You don't have to be, when I call it, God didn't ask you to come and do this. Just give us a friend that demonstrates to us that you guys are in touch with these challenges.
Thank you, Chair.
2 minutes.
Thank you, Chair. I'll spend a minute and I'll give Manu Mado another minute. Tenno, you were correct to say that there are two key areas that we need to urgently deal with, that of the relationship and the one of support, especially financial support. And the council has actually met with us and the minister to raise those two key issues. We have made an undertaking, Chair, for the first time they met with me, that we will try and with them systematically address those areas. I would ask Umar to just detail some of the things that we are currently doing in terms of addressing this. We also note the actual second report, Chair, which is what has actually happened to make sure that we are able to consolidate the success of the child and youth care workers and through the ECBD program, which has resulted in us enabling us to come and present to cabinet the work, the progress that is made in terms of the success of those kids that were given the support to the ECD in the project. And today we're able to follow up those children and to the university and make sure that they don't struggle as much when they get to university from Metro. So these are some of the relationships that have developed. I'll just give Mami Kumal the key one, especially the finance one.
Thank you, Honourable Chair. I'll give prayer number two. I think, Chairperson, it is also important to mention that the issue of oversight or entity oversight in the department is something that is going to touch on, because that hampers exactly on the issue of the relationships that need to be fostered and ensuring that the institutional relation is really, you know, taken up to a certain level. I just want to talk about the Section 12 policy, because I think it's the crux of the matter in terms of this situation. The unfortunate part is that the treasury is saying the council is not listed as a scheduled entity. So in our bill, they are advising us we must say something that establishes the council as an entity. That's when now they will consider this application, that money should be appropriated directly from treasury to the council. Because currently we're just funding them through a transfer allocation, and it's not also through the NPO side, we always ask for mediation because council is not an NPO.
The process on our working progress, not as a state-owned entity, but as a particular professional entity. Tell us clear about that.
That's what they are saying we need to explore because currently is not a scheduled a listed entity, scheduled 3A or I can't remember, in terms of the TFMA. So there is no way they can appropriate funding from treasury side to the council. So even the funding we're providing now to the council is through a deviation every time because neither an NPO or a listed entity. So we ask for deviation to fund them so that they can augment the budget they receive from the collections and the other needs for their operations. So I think also the other area on this one, the last one, is the community development professionalization. I think the president and the registrar is aware that the department wanted to give them $3 million for specific projects to professionalize community development, but Treasury declined the application, so you can't increase the transfer allocation for this specific purpose. Because when we look at their funding port, they still have $17 million in their coffers, which can fund this. So it's something that we also continuously engage in Treasury to say, these are specific projects that are not necessarily part of the operations at that time. They need extra budget for them to finalize a particular professionalization of an occupation. On the NACCW, I think the SMDG has alluded to that what needs to happen is that we just need conservation moving forward because some of the areas that were mentioned, it's partnerships that we have been working together in terms of the achievements that the NACCW has indicated. What is critical? Yes, we invested a lot of money from our side as government funding NACCW to do the very same work she was presenting. Training of the 6,000 couples, child and youth care workers, it was government money. Also, the 362 NGOs, it was government money. The challenge, though, is that it's true that this auxiliary child, you know, they are not at the professional level. They are at an auxiliary level. They are still receiving a stipend, which is really not a good thing, which we still need to continuously engage to make sure that they are appointed permanently and their salary instead of them given a stipend because they contribute a great deal in terms of child care and protection. And they are also included in the Children's Act. They are really listed as a part of the profession that needs to play a role in the protection and care of children. I think that's how I can answer.
Your work. We got your apology.
Thank you, Chair. So that would just help me to understand where to place the council in trying to understand what has been the challenges. But Chair, I'm not going to ask the specific question so that I don't take long as I have become known to do. So, because I just want to know where is the hold up, and I want to know from the department, the whole section 12.1c thing, where is the hold up? That's my question. And then as far as the NAC, also I needed to know, of the 33,000 social work professionals that I believe are in the database of the council, how many of those are actually in employment at the moment? And also I wanted to know if when a social work professional is not employed, do they pay the contribution? And just that clarity, I didn't get it. The presentation was very clear, but I didn't seem to catch that aspect of it. And then when it comes to the NACCW, am I understanding, this is just one question of clarity, am I understanding to say that the NACCW worked with ECDB model, with the child and youth care workers, and then handed over a working machine, and then did the loss of employment and the paying of stipends and all those things, did they happen after the handover? And also the issue of the late payment of those stipends. Okay, this is why I'm all over the show, because I'm trying to finish quickly. The issue of the late payment of stipends. I'm saying generally, what I've written here, that generally there seems to be a problem with the National Department of Social Development and the provinces not paying on time. And I just would like to know where is the problem, where that is concerned. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chairperson, and thank you for the presentation. For the first presentation for the Social Council, I'd like to know, so you said 2016 and 2017 there's a loss of revenue, but you didn't explain why there was a loss of revenue. Please could clarify on that. And then, of course, you explained that there was a lot of mismanagement with the first register. And I just want to find out, was any disciplinary action taken with those people that have left the company in such bad shape when you received it. Then also, I acknowledge that you've done away with consultants, that's great, but then I also like to find out what cost cutting and have you used every resource available to look at cost cutting measures and best practices? And then I was looking at your staff organogram and how many vacancies you have. Have you got an outside counsel on that these are the correct number of people that you do need to have the counsel function property? Because I've been looking at the PDF report that was sent as well, and I mean some of the costing there, for example, the subsistence allowance rates and things, I mean, is that in line with DPSA? Because to me it looks a bit higher than what a normal official would get for allowances, you know, those kind of things. And then what was so wrong with the previous third council's building that you had to go and procure and get another building, because that's also spending money. And then for the second presentation, I would have liked if the second presentation
presentation also could have had a similar diagram to the first presentation in terms of revenue and expenses and costs, because it was very clear the different years of revenue streams and expenditures. And I just thought maybe if you could do a slide and maybe send it at a later date on that. And then when on slide 8, let me just get to slide 8. Slide 8, when you say that posts in provincial and national VSDs are not open to CYCs, if you can just elaborate more on that, because my understanding is that provincial departments, they do employ child and youth care workers at the child and youth care centres, and then also you say there are no champions for the child and youth care workers, but forgive me if I'm wrong, are these two bodies not the champions for the child and youth care workers? No? Okay. And then lastly, Chair, when we speak about entities, and maybe it wasn't very clear, are we speaking about entities as SASSA and NDA? Because as we know, this portfolio already to be politically correct, we've seen in our last AG recommendations and meetings that we have financial queries and issues around those entities, and wouldn't we be taking the department taking on an extra burden if you say to bring on another entity that has financial issues already? Thank you, Chair.
Fine, thank you, Jefferson. Jefferson, I think, you know, to hear that it's the first time that one body comes to Parliament in 25 years, it's shocking but encouraging at the same time. And then also to listen to the Social Services Profession Council saying that they've recently, for the very first time, engaged the Minister was also quite shocking to hear, because I've read through the Act that governs your work, and it's very important that you advise the Minister on issues. But I think then maybe also to congratulate the Minister or to thank her for actually taking that initiative to meet with this Council. But I think also, as much as I understand your financial challenges, I want to ask the Social Services Professions Council. For me, there's no difference. You're a statutory body.
Yeah.
For me, there's no difference to the Health Professional Council.
Mm-hmm.
They operate without any funding from government. They just rely on the money that they collect from doctors, from dentists. And I've looked even through the schedule of people that they collect money from. They even collect money from people who are assistant physiotherapists. So for me, in a way, as much as I would like to hear from Ms. Nomalu as to when we will effect changes to rectify Section 12.1c in order for them to receive regular funding, so that they don't have to beg for funding on an ad hoc basis, I would also like to know, what are you doing in terms of developing more teeth? Because the Act is very clear. The Act says in Section 15, it says that no person, it says no person shall for gain, directly or indirectly, in any manner, practice a profession in respect of which professional boards have been established, unless he or she has been registered under the Act as a social worker. So this goes for the entire profession. And I think the next argument would then be, well, you know, social workers are unemployed, they're earning a little bit of money, they can't afford the fees. But when I look through the schedule of what some medical professionals are paying, it's as little as 495 rand a month. So I guess the crux of my question is, in terms of the 33,000 that are registered, that you've got registered, how many out there are not registered? No, I'm saying, I'm not sure how much they are charging, but I'm saying when you look at the Health Professional Council, when you look at how they structure their fees, there are fees at the high end for dentists and doctors, but then lower down the list you get people who are, like, for example, assistant counsellors or speech therapists, and their annual fees are as low as 495 or even lower. So I'm just saying, as much as we need to rectify Section 12.1c, don't we also need to rectify you know, the way we are operating. I understand your challenges in terms of human resources, but for example, are we making sure that we also are holding to account employers to say that if you've employed a social worker and your social worker cannot pay that registration fee, then it falls onto the employer to register the social worker with the council? Because my concern is now, at any children's home or any shelter, I can rock up there tomorrow and say I'm a social worker, I can get employed, and when something goes wrong, nobody can, you know, I'm not reported to your body. So I also feel that we must do more, one, clear, rectify Section 12.1c, but also to rectify the teeth of this council, to ensure that everybody is registered, that employers are held to account. And I think that is very important, because we cannot have a council that operates on an ad hoc basis. Some people are registering, some are not registering. So my question is, you've got 33,000 registered out of how many? So how many are not registered? If you can give me a number or percentage. In terms of the Act requires you not only to guide the minister in terms of challenges for the profession, but it also requires you to obviously make input into the training of social workers. You spoke on that. But I would like to know, are you happy with the training that social workers are receiving at colleges and universities? Because there are concerns that some people are just not being given the right skills that they need for the profession. So maybe if you can just comment on that. And then...
Thank you, Chair. Thank you very much for your presentation. It's really appreciated. I need to just make a comment. I think the challenges that you've highlighted, we certainly can see it on the ground when we look at the quality of care that communities are experiencing, which obviously has all, there's a myriad of things that we can say impact that. But I just need to first start with the child and youth care workers. It is such an important part of alleviating the burden that is on communities, and specifically to ensure that children doesn't get lost totally. I highly respect the work you do. It is really sad that we have not, as a government certainly, and I'm not talking about a specific party, I'm speaking about all of us, been able to professionalize that environment, because it is the same with HIV and AIDS, Chairperson. We've had people being lay counselors for years, and you know, much more was done to get people professionalized in terms of universities, and it seems to be a gap that we are not closing. And I just need to understand, what are we going to do with that? Because it is a workforce that we are not fully utilizing, and a lot of them are women, actually, that are working within our communities, and most of them are women that they retire as youth care workers, and they retire on their stipends, and you know. So I really think it is something that we need to look in, specifically now that we have a focus on women and developing women. I want to highlight that. I also want to ask, the minister was offended by what was said. How is that? Deputy Minister, I'm sorry. This is my favorite minister. So let me just be very, I'm not talking about this. I'm talking about the deputy.
My request is that by 12 o'clock, we must work in such a manner that they are starting.
My last one.
Yeah.
So I just need to know how that relationship, whether there is a follow-up in order to ensure that relationship is rectified, and what were the issues. And if you say withdrawal of support, what does that mean in real terms? Thank you.
I'm
sorry, Chairperson.
Okay. Oh, you did live there. You did?
No.
The only thing that I was concerned about is that
how is the data for now after the withdrawal of the deputy minister from that
point?
The other thing that I'm appreciating really is the type of work that they are doing.
Yes.
But also I'm sure that the committee, we are with them in terms of employing permanently those ones that are in the program, doing a very sterling job.
Yes.
Yeah. It's unfair for them as well. And the criteria, I'm interested in that kind of criteria.
Mm-hmm.
Because the, we know that there is a lot of demand in our communities in terms of everybody would like to volunteer to that, but how is the criteria? Thank you very much.
Okay. I cannot answer that. That's why these are cases involved. I'm very much impressed.
No, thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson. I think also let me add my voice to appreciate the kind of work that the associations are doing, and which is a very good work. And I also appreciate the kind of presentation that you presented to us. So I want to find out from Social Workers Commission and the National Association of Child Care Workers. The last time, I mean, the social workers profession appeared before the portfolio committee was in, according to the presentation, was in October 2018. Yeah, so, and at that time when you appeared before the portfolio committee, there's a number of challenges that you actually highlighted to the committee regarding social worker profession, the funding, and all of that. So I want to find out, because it's almost a year that has passed since that time, what has improved to what is the status quo? Any of the challenges that might be highlighted, whether it's progress or the status quo, is still the same. And then the second issue I wanted to raise quickly, Honorable Chair, I know it's been advised by Honorable Duwana and then Honorable Shuke, is the withdrawal of the funding by the Deputy Minister to the child care workers. Because the point that we need to make as a portfolio committee is that even if when I'm not the Deputy Minister, Honorable Minister, it was you. But I need to make an example about myself. If I'm in that position, I don't represent my own jacket being in that position. So if I go out and attend a public gathering, and then I make a statement which is being viewed or regarded as irresponsible, or some people, sectors of the society, are not thinking about what views I've expressed, I cannot withdraw funding, because the funding does not belong to me as a Deputy Minister. I think that's the point that we need to make as a portfolio committee. I found that to be very irresponsible, and then we need to condemn it for the possible tests that it is. My cautious request is that until we have the agreement, I have to say about it.
Yeah, but can I still make my point? Am I protected?
By me, yes.
Yeah. Look, I wanted to ask for protection because I did not have an option. It's the chair that is chair, so I must ask this protection from you.
So let me
express my view. And then at this situation, as a member of the committee. And then by doing so, I'm actually not anticipating what is going to be the response of the affected DG or the department.
Right.
But it's a point that deals with the principal, irrespective of whoever that person is, or whatever the circumstances that might be that confronted that particular person, it must be condemned. It must be the general principal, it must not be allowed. Thanks.
That is one area where all of us must say the same thing.
Yeah. government, everyone else, everyone else, talk about the value proposition. And then once we are together on the value proposition, we are able to know at what point at the opportunity cost and what are the implications. So the second thing that done other things that I've done. And at one point I would request you guys, one of your players and the community, to make next year, let's be together on the value proposition of the source in the land. Both from the conventional point of view and the innovative work of the National Association Child and Youth Care work. From that innovation, that innovation is highly inspired. Very careful, I think it's inspired. So I'm very careful. We need, because we need teaching, to discuss all of us as South Africans, what are you in government, what are you in social worker? Because what has put us together here is the South African interest. Before we can say whose role should be what. Once we are together on this very proposition, then we can go to our people and say, your role is this and your role is that. And what are the implications of executing your own people in the area? But this thing of child and youth care work, and this is a being used in KZN, made national. I don't think we're appreciated the very. One of the reasons that you not to believe on the question is that in the Africa now we are mainly young. The threat, in other words, if we talk about decoration or social economic decoration, the majority of the affected people is young people. If you talk of the need to plow resources to improve hope in South Africa, more resources must go to the young side. Because, you know, you can limit our hope. It might be too late. We can have the remnants. Young people need conditions of hope. Especially these children who are in these reform schools, orphanage, whatever. All these children. And this work of the National Association of the Child and Youth Care Work. This SMB in these petals of the size of the size, whatever. Courage, circles of care, courage. It's an amazing innovation. The recent minister, I think this is important. We must not think about it from the point that government will be the only source of the value, the abundance of the value proposition. When it is well articulated, you stimulate private sector to put money, you stimulate other people to put money, when the value is well articulated. Probably South Africa was lazy to articulate the value of our offer. Maybe to deviate a little bit. Sometime I was wondering if it was called other, I can't remember which program it was. They were giving us very little money. Because South Africa was not based for the education, the nation very. They only get shocked by their police and Erasmus. But when it did our very proposition, universities came out, some institutions came out, and poured money to Gauteng. To us, assist us. Because the key thing is the value proposition. Because once that value proposition finds a peer across the board, and everyone finds this is a matter of national interest, that is what quite a way to propose. Now, what I'm going to remember, very something that is very fundamental to the registrar and whoever else, but in South Africa, when you are a country, you are supposed to be independent from the country. The reason why you must be independent is that you must have teeth. Because once you depend on a minister who you might disturb volunteering, and she decided to pull out the support, and your independence is gone. And then your role is diluted. It serves no purpose. In other words, why is the people of this key that, if legally, but I don't want to cry, I don't know now, if legally government is supposed to give money to the standard institutions, it must also be matter that it's legally obligation, it's not up to the one who is in charge. Once it's like that, it means they are for kids. How to get? So then I have a question, what I work on the member is actually emphasizing. But the medical council, nursing council, whatever, another proposal I already have, when you go back to cabinet, but in South Africa, it's my view, and many other guys have listened to. It is some of my political opponents I had them proposing that if we want to strengthen the state in South Africa, there's a level of management up to a certain level where there must be a professional independent board that determines who qualifies to be in those institutions, independent of government. So government knows that if you breach the requirements of an institution, you are breaching the law by having that particular act. Access and ability to retain. These are some of the challenges that our country is actually going to face. So all I'm saying is that then once the body is a proposition, they say we need to clarify funding in terms of 12.1. Where is the problem? Because now I understand why register you were not interested. Because you first articulated the funding in terms of the act and later filed said funding from TS here. Because of my tired head, I thought you were thinking. Thank you for throwing me back. But the other question I'm interested in is what are the powers of the register? Why is the register so powerful? The whole profession could not move because of it. I thought a registrar has got a particular role in terms of who gets who becomes a member of the country, whatever, what status. But running now the council, I don't know how big up the guys know the institution better. It didn't make sense to me. And again, this is transition of the NAC, CEC, whatever was. That's a fundamental question. There's a lot of activism. And then the message that we don't appreciate this one the same way. But all I'm proposing without saying much of the same that we need a certain minister where we can talk about the work of this profession. And chat people do not have common perspective with regard to where this work should be and with all the relevant legalities that affect it. You will respond, all of the comments you have responded, but the minister will close and then we leave. I don't know if Tamadu is going to start, or if Malamba is going to start.
I'm giving you the ball.
Thank you, Honorable.
My 31st birthday, you must answer everything.
Sure. So, am I allowed to have some
members?
Okay. Thank you, Chair. Okay, so some of the questions I would allow the President to respond and the CFO as well as my management team. But just to start with what Honorable Masango mentioned, in terms of how companies established, we guided by the Act. So in terms of how you regard a public institution, that is the decision of the ministry because the act is, you know, that it's in the custody of the minister. So as to where you want to shift cancer to, which is why Alcon was talking about the new bill and how we can tweak it to ensure that if the appropriation clause is there, how do we capitalize on it? And just to link it with what Mehmet Member was saying, how come health profession cancer is self-sufficient and you guys are struggling? They've got many boards. We only have two professions, social work and child and nuclear work. Now we're looking towards having another board for community development, but it does not necessarily translate into enough revenue. If you have, for example, child and nuclear work, of the 6,000 that are registered, 6,000 odd, a bulk of them, only about, a few of them are at professional level. So if you paying 400 towards a subscription, but 6,000 are only paying 2,000, it is not sufficient to run the mandate of the professional board to attend meetings, to carry out oversight and so forth. So whereas, yes, it is there as a clause. Say, for example, the Council on Educators or for Educators, it is receiving appropriations. It's separate from the how HPCSA or another council has been established. So we can't argue which, care is responsible for the guy, because our act says there has to be appropriation. Therefore, we cannot want to undo it and say, but you must be self-sufficient, because then it cripples, the other issues which are making council not self-sufficient.
Why?
Yeah. So that point, ma'am, we need to discuss and say, how do we help unlock, the blockages? And it goes to your next question, which is, what is the hold up? Of the 33,000 people, I'll ask Vincent to talk to it, but we have the database that we've received from young unemployed graduates who come on our doors looking, saying, we're struggling, we've got, degrees and so forth. We have known figure of about 3,000 people who are saying in all the provinces we're not employed. Some of them could also be on DDG Numado's database, because remember there was a call for social workers to enlist on the department's database to say we're not employed. We having a clause that says if you are unemployed, you can make us aware, you pay an exempted fee. So if it's 400, you pay 200. So the challenges that we have with even the collection issue, my fundamental, is the regulations. Annually, we're looking at the realities of social practitioners. For a long time, social workers' salaries have always been poor. Compared to somebody with the same four-year degree, social workers would be paid an entry of about 4,000 or so. Which is still currently, in 1986, when Cisco and I were studying, we were, activists and saying, no, we will not have those kind of salaries, but the landscape hasn't changed. So even if we want to increase the annual fee to 1,000 rand commensurate with what the nurses and the paramedics and other people are paying, their salaries is more better.
The context is made this point in a different form.
Thank you, Chair.
Okay. Who becomes self-funding depends on the demographics,
yes.
The profile of the profession,
yes.
And what you earn and so on. I think you made that point.
Yes. In terms of the
doubt that we're here. Right?
No. Thank you, Chair. The former registrar, I'll allow the chairperson, FinCom, Ms. Dingu, to talk to the issue of the powers of the registrar then, and also the issue around disciplinary action, and any other issue around mismanagement. Have we used all the avenues? Yes, we have. I think it was Mayor Abraham. We have used avenues, and the issue with the house, why we are finding out, the space where we were operating from was cramped up. We could not be able to, fit into the health, what do they call it, the occupational health and safety standards, because, it was just too overcrowded. And it was a legacy money that we could not use for any other thing. However, we have explored, changing the patterns of meetings and so forth to make sure that we can stretch the money. The reason why we have a loss in 2016 and 2017, there were some historical injustice issues that the fourth council needed to deal with to pay back money, because the scales, our salary scales compared to other councils, way too low. And because council is driven driven by people, not products. We don't generate income, you know, we don't sell products and so forth. So it becomes very expensive to run a council. So then, because of the issues of the past, which were raised during the first council because it was more responsive and a lot of issues were unearthed, council had to pay about 5 million or so to staff. And there was also back pay dating back to 2006. So we had to carry that burden because now a lot of issues were brought to the surface. So that led to the dent in 2016 and 2017, which we are still trying to recover from. The subsistence allowance issue, yes, it is high, and like I said, the salaries are too low, so you try to make people feel I'm sacrificing my time to go work away from home. You know, that is a little comfort that we can make up for, not being able to pay, you know, good salaries and also good stipends for our, you know, oversight structure, because if you look at what we remunerating them to serve on council, not very, you know, appealing. Mr. November, okay, I've talked to your issue around the, yes, I've dealt with the issue. The employer code of good practice, yes, we still have a problem. I've talked to the issue of poor working conditions, but in terms of enforcing to make sure that you employ somebody who's properly registered, we're struggling with that. That's how I was saying we need, you know, money to be able to chase and do the spot checks to see where the certificate you've employed this person. But most of our managers who are policy makers now, they don't contribute to council. Very few. Actually, I practice today. I am a social worker before I'm a manager, and I'm actually managing a good lot of social workers. Therefore, I need to be registered properly so that I can be, you know, recognized as a social worker. So we have those challenges, and we're starting to engage. The board has developed a code of good practice for employers, but we want to look at how can we make it enforceable, because they have been in the code. They might choose not to, you know, subscribe. So normally we engage with the DGX team to say, we've got a problem with province X. The advert is not in line, you know, and we want to find a way in which we can align DPSA's way of, you know, putting out efforts to make sure that each province standardizes how they advertise posts, which requires registration with council. Quality, okay, those are the issues I think we've dealt with. The remarks of the chairperson. Yeah, I will leave it to to the president, and then maybe you can just talk to them.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair. I will cover one issue that deals with whether the council is satisfied with the curriculum for social work in universities, that is offered in universities. What I would say is that there's a common BSW program that was approved by SAPA, which is supposed to be offered in a standard form by all universities. Of course, it depends who teaches that program. Yeah. We are happy with the program because it's developmental in approach and it seems to address the need to help the social workers who are qualified to address the needs on the ground. Currently, the SAPA one has been phased out, and there's a new one which was developed by the Council for Higher Education, and it was the council was involved in terms of providing comments on that curriculum. In the same way, it's a very, very good curriculum. Standard. Every university must align what they teach in accordance with that curriculum. But the main thing is who is the lecturer or the university itself. How do they adapt that curriculum in to what they exist in the university? The main problem in the universities is work experience. You find the theory part of the curriculum is good, but there are not enough, you know, spaces in the government and in the NGOs for the students to do their practicals, especially from second to the fourth year. And the council, what the council ensures all the time is that all second year students, before they go onto the field to have contact with clients, they should have been registered with the council. So we've got, I'm not sure how many students can be registered with the council, but it's quite a lot.
Thank you, Mr. Chairperson. I'm responding to Father Mayor's question around the disciplinary action of the former registrar. Just to say that with this. Disciplinary procedures were actually taken, so much so that she was found guilty, and because of the lapse between the two councils, she continued with services until the fourth council was inaugurated, and then we could actually take action on her dismissal. Besides the disciplinary inquiry, there was also a criminal case lodged against her, because of the fraud and mismanagement issues. But nothing came of that because the officers are still investigating and you have files keep on getting lost. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you very much. I'm just going to ask our chairperson of the NACCW to respond on the deputy minister meeting because he was present at that meeting, not myself.
Thank you, Chairperson. We just want to clarify to say that Honourable Deputy Minister was the keynote speaker at our NSW conference during July in Durban. And after the conference, there was a resolution passed by the members that a delegation should visit the minister because there were two things that they were unhappy about in terms of the minister's speech, and one of them that we wanted to see clarity from the deputy minister was that she made remarks about the child and youth care workers should not be unhappy about non-payment or delayed payments or stipends, and then she also said the role of child and youth care workers are those of support workers to social workers. And then the other issue that was mentioned there is the issue that of alleged abuse by child and youth care workers, of crimes committed to children and trafficking of children. So a delegation, we sent a letter to the Deputy Minister's office and we had a meeting on the 4th of November to seek clarity on these two issues. The Minister was unhappy that we sent this letter and that her address was questioned at this from the conference, and she felt it is disrespectful. We informed the minister that we actually came as a delegation just to clarify these matters and hope that the meeting would clarify the situation and lead to greater understanding between the sector and the deputy minister. And that if there are any acts of misconduct of child and youth care workers within the profession, it must be reported. Because people feel that it was an open statement. The minister then feel that she was the champion for child and youth care work in Parliament in a previous term, and that she will say the same things and that she's very unhappy and that she will no longer be a champion for child and youth care work within the department, and she also withdraws the support there. So that was what we left in the meeting. Thank you.
Thank you very much. And just to clarify, it was never ever said that she would withdraw finances.
Mm.
So that was not true, but yeah, what we ever reported. Just to say around salaries, just to start off with, at the beginning, the Ibibindi project, remember, was a job creation project for people in rural disadvantaged communities. The idea was to recruit unemployed people in area that were and young women who had not received were not working, fill them up to provide them with services. So the issue of creating decent jobs was what was quoted as the onset of the Bibendi model. So the concern was raised with the national department and the provincial department throughout the 5-year program that we are unhappy that people who have qualified are not getting salaries, that they are still on stipends. How can we advocate to Treasury for salaries? How do we move this forward? So if you, the question was, you know, did we do the relevant advocacy around salaries? The answer is yes. You can almost say it was understood before the project that it was going to be the experience of childcare workers to receive salaries during the time in our partnership, and thereafter, always in writing and in our motivations. The issue around delays in payments from the provincial Department of Social Development to the districts and from the districts to the implementing partners and from the implementing partners to the childcare workers who end up with delays in salaries has been also a perennial problem that has been raised as part of our partnership at National Department of Social Development. And there has been delays from provincial treasury to provincial departments, and there were various reasons for the delay. Unfortunately, it hasn't been fixed up. The issues haven't been addressed, and it continues to be a problem. And at the moment, in some provinces, people are being paid for four months of delay. The issue of posts in DSD, just to say, in the department posts, child and youth care workers are employed in residential care facilities up to level 6. My point about OSD refers. The fact is that child and youth care workers are pitched at the level 6, and the opportunity for mobility to manage a child and youth care centre and for further mobility in managerial position is limited. So there's a ceiling to the development. And obviously the salaries as well of child and youth care workers versus social workers and community development workers are different. I just want to go back to the fact that we are predominantly a women's workforce. And with the EDBAD project, we do come from the rural areas and we do represent young people who have taken this on as a career. So there's obviously terrible disappointment that the government had offered decent jobs and they have not taken place. I just want to, if you would allow me please, to just acknowledge Sibo Mulweni, who's here with us. She's a child and youth care worker who started off in Mbumburu. She's an unemployed youth. She's now here with a degree in child and youth care, and maybe she could just make herself up. She's a senior mentor responsible for the training and education of the Izibindi project in KwaZulu-Natal as we speak. So she is actually grounds up. Thank you very much. And I think that just to say that we welcome the possibility of a session to understand child and youth care.
Thank you very much. In terms of that, I think there are two aspects in the National Association of Child and Youth Care Workers. Because those young people who get involved in caring service, but it is those young people who are vulnerable, who are actually exposed to a safety net, not to actually slip through what we call the cracks in the development of the care. And that's the primary area that we are actually worried about. And I think those are two aspects that are very, very critical. And I agree with your team that there's a cost benefit if you recognize supporting that level, because they demand less to their pockets than what they need because of the level of qualification. So very straightforward. One more thing, what I'm really saying that before you came, so here are the areas of concern at the high level. One is that inconsistent institutional relations. Like, for instance, they argue that according to the law, they are required to be listened to by the department on annual basis on how they, what they think about the way in which the service is being run or whatever. They are not given that opportunity. But they say, since you came to make them, but it's a matter that should not end anything, it should be given funding. But it must also be consistent. But they give you to deal with that method. Two, that the nature of their profession is struggling in terms of resources. Now they are the literal opposite here.
which must be addressed. They need capacity to do their work. They must exercise their profession without fear of failure. It means they must be in the place. Now, for them to be the Nigerian, they must train their own mind, their own profession, whatever. Like what has cancer talent. But there's a practical challenge that a significant portion of their profession does not get income for the corporate to lead that profession. Yet the services of their independent profession remain required. So there are two ways of independence. It's either they make their own money, and what cannot be made by money, if for example they were to go to the government for the minimum service, some legal assurance of independence must be delivered to before they get the resources. But all I'm saying, I'm not saying this is what must happen. Let's look at the contradictions, but this is not one side of the court. So all I'm proposing is that let the minister maybe at the beginning of the year have this group proposition, look at the implications for different compares towards achieving what is contained in the group proposition, and then say what legalities are required to make sure that these standard conventions of independence of a profession are also attended to benefit the nation by ensuring that government, one of the things is my last point, we are saying for the which means I support government. Legally, if you want this profession to give them to the government, you must not employ some people who don't register. It's too much. It stands there.
Yeah.
I remember that they stick to the standard of the profession. Because if they bypass the profession, they can mess up them. But if they don't bypass the profession is going to hold on them to make sure that they stick to the standard. So the code of conduct must of practice for the employer without a very critical. All I'm saying, even in the today in the economy, where you guys, the minister, you lead us, and so what are you proposing going forward to leave a legacy after the administration?
Thank you very much, Chairperson, for the opportunity. And I think I'd like to start from the point that was made from the very beginning, which you yourself, you repeat over and over again about the challenges that we face overall as South Africans before we can talk about which political party we belong to. Secondly, we committed ourselves from the very beginning at that very workshop that we all had together. And that workshop, I am still personally a bit unhappy with our going back to it and looking into what did we say at that workshop. And it's a statement for me that's both for the portfolio as well as my own department and my own office. And I think that will help us because if you talk about the value proposition, for instance, we need to go back to that, but we indicated then that it's a journey. But a journey needs to be finished. We can't keep on making excuses and say it's a journey. A journey needs to be finished. At some point, the journey needs to be finished. So the importance of today's meeting for me is about the role of the council. And I know that the council was knocking on the doors of the minister to have a meeting, and it took us very long to have that meeting. Again, I was just shocked at the division of duty, because I don't think that the division was on one side. Everyone who was concerned in this must take responsibility. Can't be that so many years there was no meeting, there was no accountability, and it resulted in what I listened to when they were making the presentation about the financial management and mismanagement and all that. So I'm hoping that we're starting a new page which will help us to be accountable, all of us, because accountability, I must say, it must stop. We've got corrective measures which were presented there. In my view is that the responsibility here is to all of us. The tendency seems to be like pointing a finger one way. We must stop pointing a finger one way, all of us. Because if we point a finger one way, we miss sight of the people that are active there, that are supposed to be accountable. If you look at this thing where they're talking about issues of management, delayed election of the third council, no accountable structures, collapse of financial management, I mean, really, this is just not acceptable. So I think it's something that we have to work collectively together and assist each other. Considering also the social ill that we are seeing, and therefore this NACC for me is key. Mm-hmm. And Chairperson, you've covered what needs to be done. And so I'm hoping that the session that we should have it as early as possible, so that we are able to develop our action plan and we accept what we are supposed to do. We don't have a long time, Chair. The legacy, 1 year is gone already. We cannot count 1 year. So we are left with 4 years. So it means after the workshops, the strat sessions, the annual plans, the state of the nation and all that, we must then come back and say, here are the guidelines that we are having overall, which is a bigger plan. But when it comes to us pulling this together, these are the things that we're going to do. We will take responsibility of making sure we have that workshop as soon as possible. But that workshop must not forget about the fact that we had a first workshop where we agreed on a number of things, and we need to implement the things that we agreed upon. Thank you, Chairperson.
That's why
we'll
be focusing on this social work. But I think it's clear that we have listened to our health department, the social service council, parliament. We are saying, let's work together towards a common perspective and deal with the implications of the commitment towards that common perspective. And I must take this opportunity to thank you for raising this matter with us. We are at your disposal at all material times. But your relationship with the department is going to be very important, and what is going to be. Don't be like a man who, or a woman who, when the marriage is not working, you will run out. So let everything have a result in the amount of time. If it doesn't happen, please speak calmly. But we must get the fourth minister, the fourth council, because when they stood up and confronted these issues, they actually made a dramatic change.
Yeah.
But for you to keep anything from other people, you must first keep your own standards. Because there is no country that has got poor, that is very rare, that can have credibility to maintain standards somewhere. At that point, having said everything, will it power? Will it power?